You stay here with the donkey. Me and the boy are going to go over there, and we're going to worship, and I'm coming back. He says, the implication there in the language there is, we will come again to you. He says, I and the boy are going to go over there. I and the boy are going to worship. I and the boy are going to come again to you. That's the grammatics there, of the syntax of the words there. Abraham believed God, and he had no intentions of bringing back a corpse. Abraham believed God and obeyed God, even when he didn't know where, as Hebrews 11, verse 8 tells us. Go back to Hebrews 11 and verse 8. What did he say in verse 8? By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place. So when God called him to go, when he didn't know where, he obeyed. He obeyed, as verse 9 tells us. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, in verse 9 and verse 10 and in verse 13, down through verse 16. Even when he didn't know how. When you look at verse 11 and 12 that we'll look at next week, that by faith Sarah herself received power to conceive even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Where was her focus? On the Lord, the one who had promised. Verse 12, therefore from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of seed. Of sand by the seashore. Even when he didn't know why, as verse 17 and verse through verse 19 says, Abraham believed. Notice especially there in verse 19. Verse 19 says, he considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Now think about this when you think about Abraham's situation here. Abraham had no precedent here to base his beliefs on. He had no standard to rely on. This had never happened. All he had was his faith, but he trusted God anyway. The text tells us that it wasn't until the third day of travel with Isaac and their servants that Abraham sees their destination. He sees this mountain in the land of Moriah. Now understand this, sometimes it's not the test itself that is such a trial as the waiting is, the anticipation of the test. So think about that. He leaves his home where him and Sarah have been raising Isaac. And for 3 days, he's traveling across the land. 3 24-hour days. And all along that journey, you could just imagine the thoughts that are running around the wheels in his mind. What must he have been going through for those 3 days as he's going through the wilderness with Isaac? Now, remember, Abraham hadn't told Isaac the real reason for their journey. And just the thought of it alone, much less the talking about it, would have been heartbreaking for Abraham. Isaac must have died 100 times in Abraham's heart before they ever reached Moriah, because he's thinking about what I'm going to have to do when I get there. I know God said this. I know he gave the promise, but I know he also is commanded to do this. And so he keeps climbing, and he keeps climbing up in loneliness, a captive to the secret that only he knew, that his son was about to die. And his thoughts are that he comes to a conclusion in, that we find out in Hebrews there, that even if God was going to raise Isaac from the dead, the idea of being alone on the top of that mountain without Isaac was a thought he couldn't share with anybody else. And then we see the depth of his love for God in his act of worship. Now, this is the first occurrence of the word worship in the Bible that's found there in verse 5 of chapter 22 in Genesis. Understand that worship is always costly. When we come to God in worship, we come as living sacrifices, willing to put ourselves on the altar and to put whatever is most valuable to us, our own lives, on the altar before the Lord. As Abraham approaches the top of the mountain, he approached God to worship with a sacrifice that meant more to him than anything else in this world. And that's exactly the picture that we need to have in mind when we come to worship God as well. By faith, we need to give God the best that we have to offer, not our leftovers, but to give the best. But then notice the triumph of Abraham's faith, the triumph of Abraham's faith. You find this in verse 10 down to verse 14. Three things occurred that marked the triumph of Abraham's faith over fear. Notice the first is the heavenly silence is broken. The heavenly silence is broken. You see this in verse 10 down to verse 11. Then Abraham reached out his hand. Well, let's actually go back. Go back, if you will, to verse 9. We're going to pick up that verse in a little bit anyway here. Actually, we'll pick up with verse 8. Go back to verse 7. We'll go back to verse 7. Let's go there. Let's go all the way back. Verse 7 says this. So they've left together to go on this journey in verse 5. Verse 6 says, and Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering. And notice what he does. He lays it on Isaac, his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. And so they went, both of them, together. Verse 7. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Isaac understood the process of what happened with offerings. He knew there had to be wood, he knew there had to be fire, and he knew there had to be a sacrifice. But he's looking around and one thing's missing. Where's the sacrifice, Dad? Then notice, Abraham says in verse 8, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them, together. Now you could just imagine when Isaac asked his dad that, the heaviness Abraham felt at that moment. I can't tell you yet. All I know, son, is God's going to provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. Knowing in his heart, knowing in his mind, here's what God's told him, you're the sacrifice. Isaac, you're the sacrifice. But he can't tell Isaac that. And he just tells him the promise, somehow, some way, God's going to provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So here again we see that. So they went, both of them, together. Verse 9, when they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham reached out his hand. Just imagine all the emotions he's going through at this moment. He reaches out his hand and he takes the knife to slaughter his son. He's still being obedient. And in the midst of that quietness, his son's not said anything. His son has not cried out, Dad, Dad, don't do this. Dad, stop, please. Why are you doing this to me? He's just trusting in what his dad's already told him, that God's going to provide. He binds him, puts him on the altar. Abraham reaches out for the knife. He's about to offer his son. You could just imagine the grief that he's going through at that moment. And then verse 11. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. Heavenly silence is broken. Think about it. Abraham methodically prepared all the elements of the sacrifice, the wood, the fire, and the knife. And heaven remained silent. Abraham never stopped. He was committed to obeying God. He must have hoped, though, that God some way, somehow is going to intervene. And by the time he had placed Isaac on the altar and he's drawn the knife above his head and he's probably already reconciled to experience in his heart the greatest pain of his life out of the silence because nobody's saying anything, God speaks. Abraham, Abraham. Understand this, God doesn't often intervene until just the right time. We have an agenda when we want him to speak. We have an agenda of when we want him to move. We have an agenda of when we want him to act. But God remains silent until he is ready to intervene in just the right time. And notice the heavenly solution is given in verse 12. He said to him, the angel did, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him." This is the angel giving the message from the Lord. "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." In verse 13, "And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns." Wow. The solution was that God intervened when Abraham needed him the most. Understand this, God is the solution to anything you face in this life. We don't need anything but God himself. In times of tests, in times of trials, our tendency is to look for a solution instead of looking for God. And in this case, God provided a ram as a substitute for Isaac. And then notice here how the heavenly substitute is provided as verse 13 goes on and says, "And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, 'The Lord will provide,' as it is said to this day, 'On the mount of the Lord it shall be provided.'" Abraham takes that ram, offers it on the altar as a substitute for his son Isaac, and everything becomes clear. The promises were still intact. Isaac was safe. And Abraham's faith had been strengthened beyond measure. Wow. Never in a million years do I think Abraham ever thought this is the way it was all going to work out. We usually have our thinking of, oh, sure, it's going to work out this way and that way, and this is going to fall into place and that. And it never works out the way we think because God has the plan, because God is in control. So the fourth thing we need to see is, if we want to grow in our faith, is we need to depend on God's provision. Depend on God's provision. You see this in verse 8 and verse 14. So go back to verse 8 where Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So they went, both of them, together. Go to verse 14. "So Abraham called the name of that place, 'The Lord will provide,' as it is said to this day, 'On the mount of the Lord it shall be provided.'" The Lord will provide. What that means simply is that the Lord will see to it. It's the word we know of the name of God, Jehovah Jireh. God will provide. So as they climb Mount Moriah, as Abraham climbed Mount Moriah with his son, Abraham was confident that God would meet every need. On what could he depend? On what could he base that on? He certainly couldn't depend on his feelings because there must have been that terrible pain within as he contemplated sacrificing his son on the altar. He loved his only son, but he also loved his God and he wanted to obey him. Abraham also couldn't depend on other people. Sarah's back at home. The two servants, they're back down at the base at the camp down there. Thank God for friends and family members who can help us carry our burdens, but there are some trials in life that we have to face alone. Because it's only then that we can see what our Father really can do for us. The only thing Abraham could depend on were the promise and the provision of the Lord. He knew in his heart of hearts that God could raise Isaac from the dead if that was his plan. Apparently, no resurrections had happened at that point. Never happened before that time. So Abraham, he's exercising great faith in God. When the situation appears hopeless for you, here's what you need to ask yourself. What Genesis 18 and verse 14 says. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Is anything too hard for the Lord? And then remind yourself of Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13 that says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. God provided the sacrifice that was needed, a ram that took Isaac's place on the altar in verse 13. Where does the Lord provide our needs? When does he does that when we're in the place that he wants us. Abraham was at the right place he was supposed to be. Think about this. If Abraham was still down at the base of that mountain, God would not provide because he wasn't where he needed to be. If he had stayed back at home and said, I'm not doing that, I'm not going there and doing that, he would not have been there to receive God's provision. Abraham was at the right place so God could meet his needs. Here's what we need to realize. We have no right to expect the provision of God if we're not in the will of God. You have no right to expect the provision of God if you're not in the will of God. When does God meet our needs? Just when we have the need and not a minute before. When you bring your request to the throne of grace, God answers with mercy and grace, as Hebrews 4:16 says, in time of need. Sometimes it looks like for us that God waits until the last minute to send help. But that's only from our human point of view. God is never late. He is always right on time. And how does God provide for us? He provides for us in ways that are usually quite natural. God didn't send an angel and say, okay, here's the sacrifice. He simply let a ram get caught in a bush at the time that Abraham needed it and in a place where Abraham could get his hands on it. All Abraham needed was one animal. So God didn't send a whole flock of sheep. Who does God give his provisions to? He gives his provisions to those who trust him, to those who obey his instructions. When we're doing the will of God, we have the right to expect the provision of God. When God's word is done in God's way, when his work is done in his way, it will not lack God's support. When God's work is done in God's way, it will not lack God's support. God is not obligated to bless my ideas, my projects, but he is obligated to support his work if it's done his way. So why does God provide for our every need? For the great glory of his name. There we're back to that glory again we talked about this morning in Romans. So notice as we close the testimony of Abraham's faith. You find this in verse 15 and verse 16. Verse 15 says, and the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you. And I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore, that your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. Here's some things we need to learn. Seek to glorify Christ. In times of testing, it is easy to think only about our needs. It's easy to think only about our burdens. Instead, what we ought to be focusing on is bringing glory to Jesus Christ. We find ourselves asking, how can I get out of this? Instead of asking, what can I get out of this that will honor the Lord? We sometimes waste our sufferings by neglecting or ignoring opportunities to tell others about how the Lord helped us go through the furnace, through the fire. If ever two suffering people revealed Jesus Christ, it was Abraham and Isaac on Mount Moriah. Their experience is a picture of the Father and the Son. And the cross is one of the most beautiful types of Christ found anywhere in the Old Testament. This picture here is. Jesus said to the Jews in John chapter 8 and verse 56, he said, your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad. In Isaac's miraculous birth, Abraham saw the day of Christ's birth. And in Isaac's marriage in Genesis 24, he saw the day of Christ coming for his bride. But on Mount Moriah, when Isaac willingly put himself on the altar, Abraham saw the day of Jesus Christ's death and resurrection. There's truths here about the atonement that are seen in this. The Father and the Son acted together. You saw that phrase over